You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I'm your host, Connor Coulson. And once again, I'm joined by Mother.
Hello.
In this minute, it opens with Milburn saying, "It's those things," and ends with Yannick scaring the shit out of Milburn and Firefield over comms saying, "This is the Prometheus. What is your position?" So, we finally get to our boys, Firefield and Milburn.
I love those two docs. I really do.
Me too. I know they often get the most criticism of all the characters, but I don't know. They're sort of comedic relief, I guess.
Yeah.
That they're lighter characters and they're sort of bickering and all of that is
kind of like Hudson was a comedy relief character.
They kind of remind me a little bit of like a Rosencrantz and Guildenstern or one of my favorite movies, obviously Prometheus is the other one, is Road to El Dorado, Miguel and Tullio.
Yes, I get it.
That's the sort of, yeah. I like that character dynamic. And yeah, they're ridiculous. They do stupid things, but I think that just sort of serves to going with the theme that I've been talking about through the whole podcast, is that this movie kind of shows how ridiculous and flawed human beings are. It really is David's story. And so from David's perspective, his creators are stupid and disappointing. So having characters like this makes sense. We've so far seen Holloway's flaws just in these couple of minutes that you're on. Seeing how Holloway fails, and now you're seeing how Milburn and Fifield fail. Or we're leading up to that.
Yeah, there's the scaredy catness being established right here to kind of lead into what's going to be happening next to them. I think that they would have been less susceptible to it if they didn't establish this point here that, like, they're scared shitless. But at the same time, when you get to that minute, I just think the whole hammerpede scene is kind of a bit ridiculous.
I just remembered when we're watching the minute back, when Milburn says, "Are they real?" looking at the dead bodies, the pile of engineer bodies, I should say. Yeah, I was just thinking, nah, man, they were just having a Halloween party and these were all the mannequins that they were using. I mean, that's a point. If you're on an alien world, you're not immediately going to know what you're looking at. So that's something that I...
It could have been a sculpture of some sort.
Absolutely. And then Fifield says it looks like a Holocaust painting. So, I mean, how do you... There's no real way to know just from looking. Is this some sort of sculpture or is that real?
I like how in the pyramid scan that soon comes after their approach of the bodies, you can see exactly where Milburn and Fifield are positioned in the pyramid. It's not into the central room, but off to the side, and you can kind of see where the juggernaut is, which is off to the right, because that little pup just stops at the door because there was no way through and David had to let it through.
Right, and I'm only just noticing now that, yeah, the juggernaut is right down in the center there. So that shape, it almost looks like like three mounds, but no, that's the juggernaut. You're just seeing part of it.
Yeah.
Huh. So it looks like this, well, it's hard to tell for certain, but where the bodies are piled up, that it might be a dead end, which might explain why they're all piled up there. Because the only other explanations is someone or something moved them there, which is creepy.
Yeah, if anyone could move something after being hit with a pathogen. Or maybe you mean like they came afterwards.
Well, if they're running away and then they reached a dead end, that makes sense. They all got run into this corner and they couldn't get out. Well, they just all died there.
Yeah.
My other theory was that there was actually some kind of creature that they were running from, because in an earlier minute, you definitely hear some sort of screaming, like a monstrous sound.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like the Deacon.
And that's why I'm thinking, well, why wouldn't there be some sort of monster? I mean, it could even be just a mutated engineer, that there was some sort of containment breach, mutagen got on someone or something, and then you ended up with well, what we see here, engineers fleeing for their lives from some kind of threat. Because it definitely, I mean, they're running down the hallways in the holo projection. So it's clearly, it wasn't just mutagen. I feel like there was something coming after. That's the theory I'm working with.
Yeah. Interesting.
That's why I love this movie, is that, like, as I was saying, when you come across a pile of bodies like that or anything else in the ship and pyramid or the rest of the planet, let's be honest, it's not immediately apparent what anything is or what it does. So I've sort of been doing this forensic analysis of the situation, and I don't think there's some sort of conflict between engineers. That's not what it looks like to me, because there is this theory, and I do agree with it, there's probably a creator faction and a destroyer faction of engineers. Mm-hmm. I don't see signs of conflict of that nature here. It's definitely a disaster. It's definitely running from a threat.
Well, I can see where Melbourne and Firefield are, because that doorway leads to another room, like the head chamber, right?
Yeah.
Definitely, it looked like they were running away from something. It's kind of like when we saw in Alien Covenant where the engineers were running towards the city gates and trying to get out and then getting caught by the pathogen. I think it's kind of like that.
It's absolutely haunting.
Yeah, because it's a very similar sort of pile-up, you know, minus the suit, which also brings me to a point. They said that the head was about 2,000 years old, and that means these suits are 2,000 years old, which means that they're somewhat fossilized, and lending a bit more credibility to Dallas's analysis of
Dallas's analysis, jockey. The segment within Prometheus by Minute. Yeah.
Yes, where he says that the suit looks like it's fossilized would mean that the derelict is already on LV-426 and it has nothing to do with David.
Oh,
I think that was like they're out, just in case Prometheus didn't get a second movie, just in case Covenant didn't perform the way it's supposed to.
There's going to be time travel in the third one.
there's every possibility that the Deacon or some sort of xenomorph exists before David's creation, which is what we hear in the hologram projection, because it records some sound as well. And the evidence that the space jockey, or that even the elephantine jockey and the space jockey are the same thing, basically, not taking size into account.
Yeah, with the size difference, why couldn't the engineers augment themselves to be larger or smaller? We've already seen that the engineers in Covenant aren't the same as the ones we see in Prometheus. So
yeah,
I'm willing to bet there's a wide variety of engineers out there.
It just makes sense. Like, not all human beings are exactly the same size and exactly the same color, etc.
It's a shame that none of our closest relatives lived up until the modern day, but I've actually been doing a lot of research into that lately, just unintentionally. On YouTube, there seems to be a lot of videos about our human ancestors, or they were around at the same time as modern human beings. So there's Neanderthal, there's Australopithecus, there's all these different humanoid beings, which it would have been so cool. Could you imagine a world where we still had these similar yet very different species? They're different species who are able to create art and language and all of that, and we're all living at the same time. That fascinates me so much. Imagine that, like, if you're going to a doctor, you would have like a human doctor and a Neanderthal doctor and an Australopithecus doctor. Or at least specialists. I guess we're roughly the same, but not identical.
Yeah.
So yeah, it makes total sense that you might have Homo florensis, I believe, is the hobbit humanoid that they found. So she was only like 3 feet tall, I think, if that.
Yeah.
And then you've got, I'm forgetting the name of that one, but there was like a huge humanoid who was about 7 feet tall, if I recall. So absolutely, I totally buy that. The space jockey we see in Alien is of a different breed, which means maybe there's a whole different story and culture and everything going. Oh, it's so exciting. I love these movies.
There's so much opportunity there. different directions you could go in as well with that. So yeah, I really appreciate how multi-layered Prometheus can be. And on that topic, where Melbourne and Fifield are kind of discussing what's happening in front of them, and then they see this view, and Melbourne goes, "Those things, are they real?" And Fifield's like, "Of course they're real." Melbourne goes, "Jesus Christ, look at that pile. Look how high up they are." And Fifield observes, like, it looks like they were running from something. Melbourne tells Fifield, "Don't touch, okay?" Which is, I think, is a bit funny because he goes and touches the canopy later.
I didn't even notice that. Yeah. Oh, you're one to talk, Melbourne. So if it's dead and we've already handled something like this before, be cautious. But if you've never seen it before and it's alive and hissing at you, definitely touch it. Put your face right up in it.
So after that section, Melbourne goes, "This thing is opened up from the inside almost like it's exploded." So there's talking about the chest burst scene with Kane and kind of like putting that into this as well. You may be seeing something like this later on in the film. So there's that little seed planted.
Which is good. I mean, it's sort of a callback to how in the original Alien, they are looking at the space jockey and going, looks like there's something burst out of his chest, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
And about 30 seconds into this minute, you see one space jockey or engineer with a huge hole in the back of the helmet and the head. Like, it's clearly, it's hard to tell if it's exploded inwards or outwards, but something was powerful enough to puncture through.
I would say inwards because of the way it's melted. It looks like acid ate away on the side of it.
Yeah, because everything else is intact. Like, when we found, well, we know for a fact that from the engineer head that they took back to the Prometheus, that didn't erode this way. I mean, this stuff sort of calcified. I guess, we shouldn't say fossilized, but it's calcified or mummified. But it doesn't, no, that's not normal.
from our observations, yeah.
Yes.
So then Fifield mentions it looks like some scene out of some Holocaust painting, which led me on a wild goose chase of looking at a lot of Holocaust paintings. And I finally found one, which is called "One of the Death Pits, Belsen, SS Guards Collecting Bodies." This was painted in 1945 by Leslie Cole. And I can include an image of that for kind of to add to the post. I felt like this whole scene was based on Dante's Inferno.
There is a bit of that coming through, yeah. Which you see a lot more of in Covenant. And I'm noticing, revisiting Prometheus after watching Covenant, you're probably seeing this too. It's just a lot of those Paradise Lost, Dante's Divine Comedy, Frankenstein sort of references, they're all... this franchise is thematically consistent. Although in the last minute, I meant to say, or minute 53, I said there's not a lot of thematic continuity. There is. It's tonal. Like, each film's very tonally different, but the themes are very much consistent.
Yeah, they stay the same. It's kind of the point. I feel like the life and death cycle of the xenomorph going along with human life is metaphorical of what sort of cycles we go through. Talks about Nietzschean themes that are kind of brought to life by like films further on in the series, like Alien 3 and Resurrection.
I like the idea. Well, I mean, Battlestar Galactica has been around for a long time now. So if you haven't seen the ending, a bit of a spoiler, but it's your fault. The idea of the cyclical nature of the universe, that all things, what do they say? It's like everything that's happened before will happen again. And I love that idea that the engineers have been doing this for millennia, you know, who knows how long. And so maybe we have had xenomorphs over and over. Maybe xenomorphs were a kind of curse upon the universe, that we've had proto-xenomorphs and we've had the Deacon, and for some reason, this creature has to exist, and the engineers are compelled to bring this creature into reality. And then you could probably get into this sort of weird supernatural spiritual zone of it is a god that demands to be brought into reality, to the physical realm, which is terrifying and also something that I could believe in, the idea that, okay, so the engineers worship this thing as a god, but maybe that's why you could almost see it as they're afraid of it, they're resisting it. That the original space jockey that ends up on LV-426, who knows what the story was there, but clearly the relationship between itself and the xenomorph, or a variant of, was not good. And then David is just compelled to create this. It's almost like he's fallen under this spell or a curse that he's just obsessed. Even by android standards, it's the level of work he puts into bringing this creature to life and the amount of love he has for it. Oh, yeah. I mean, this is just, I'm thinking out loud here. I've just had this idea. There's something bigger and older and, dare I say, eldritch happening here.
Well, funny you should say that. On the theme of eldritch horrors and stuff like that, one of the basic foundations of Alien, part of its like reoccurring themes is the cosmic horror of eternal return, which is what I was talking about. It's called eternal recurrence, where things will happen again and again and again until someone is different, someone who can is someone who's superhuman can kind of defeat the cycle. So and for us that's Ripley, right?
Yeah.
But it took until she was more than human, like part human, part xenomorph, for her to defeat the alien. It was only then that she could do it. So I think it's just really interesting to go from like people always complain like, oh, you know, Alien doesn't have cosmic horror. And it's like, do you know what you are talking about?
Yeah, we just sort of stumbled upon this idea, but there does seem to be a lot of evidence for it. And I would say Alien is definitely cosmic horror. It downplays that sort of, well, see, H.P. Lovecraft, it implies these are gods and this is how old they are, whereas Alien, you know, well, by virtue of the fact that it is a visual medium, it's not a book, it doesn't have that freedom to go, well, maybe it's this and maybe it's that. It's just you are seeing what it is and it's up to you to infer its origins and what have you. But yeah, I mean, just talking about it right now, I'm going, holy shit. Yeah, there's this whole eternal recurrence and almost becomes mythical. Ripley becomes this mythic figure that's able to break this cycle that who knows how long it's been going for? Who knows how long the engineers, or variants of, have been compelled to bring this creature into existence and then lose control of it and then be destroyed by it. You know, the original space jockey, obviously destroyed by it, the engineers in the prequel period, destroyed by their own machinations. And then I think that's probably the ending we're going to see for David. It's the most logical conclusion that he will be destroyed by the one thing he was ever able to love, truly.
Yeah, especially with the scene with just Milbert and Fifield just observing the pile of dead bodies. Obviously, Janik's voice coming over the radio is a classic jump scare scene, but I really like it. It's effective.
Jump scares can work if done appropriately, rather than, you know, oh god, like those Paranormal Activity movies. There was no horror. It was just jump scares.
But what I wanted to say about these pile of dead engineer bodies, it's kind of like a part of that theme is Dante's Inferno, and in Inferno Canto 14. If you're following us on the webpage, you'll be able to see the picture. Basically, they're just observing the seventh circle of hell, which is devoted to violence against God, his person, his possessions. So there's all these like pile of dead bodies being rained on with fire. And it's been characterized as the horrible art of justice.
Oh, I hate that bloody rain fire. It ruins your day. Can't put your laundry out. Well,
we're heading that way with global warming. It's going to be raining fire soon.
I think that was in The Simpsons, yeah, like acid rain or something.
Yeah. So it's interesting because it says like how in the observation of going through hell with Dante and Virgil, having these two have to go around this ring and in this circle. There's actually a section in here where it says, like, don't be surprised if you see something new, because we're going, even though we're going in circles, you're going to see new things on this journey. And I think that's what they're saying with Prometheus here. You're encountering the scene. It's going to be kind of like retreading similar themes, but it's not exactly ripping them off. So
yeah, part of me, especially with Covenant, would have loved more of a more direct Dante's Inferno type story where Walter and David are sort of Virgil and Dante, and then they're watching as human beings fail. And it doesn't even have to be literally the seven deadly sins, although it could. I'm just watching everyone's vices destroy them. And because I think overall, Covenant's message, more so than Prometheus, has a very anti-human sentiment. Mm. And so I think that would be quite new and challenging, that you have these two central characters who are not human, who are watching as one by one humans are destroyed by their own weaknesses. And yeah, you've never seen that before, because most stories are just, you know, how great is humanity and we always overcome. And it's like, what if David's right? And what if Walter was seduced to the dark side, sort of, or at least there was that possibility?
Mm, yeah.
And then maybe he sort of reveals that, nah, you weren't affecting me in any way. I'm still just a robot doing my job. there's elements of that, but it ultimately doesn't culminate. And I mean, we'll talk about it a lot more when we get to Covenant. I think these films have so much to say, but they're also a little bit confused about how to say it. And then ultimately it's not focused, but that's kind of what I love about these prequels, that they're a little bit ADD and they're just like, oh, and this, and also this, and yeah, Holocaust and Dante's Inferno, and da, 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 like making so many semiotic references. That's quite appealing to me, as we've mentioned in previous minutes, that we both love to pull apart a puzzle. That's much more fun.
Yeah, I think it's more fun this way. I like watching action horror or other types of movies for whatever reason, but I really enjoy this analysis. It's kind of like gives my brain exercise. It's the best way I can describe it.
There's something very satisfying. I think you've probably experienced the same thing, that when you first watch these films, they're films, you don't know where it's going, it surprises you, and then you sort of, they're quite challenging movies. They're divisive movies that people sort of, their opinions about them have changed over time. You and I are the same in that respect, that we ultimately end up coming back over and over again and not even really watching them as movies anymore, but as puzzles and as this sort of forensic exercise. You know, in this minute especially, I love just looking at every minute detail of these corpses and just going, well, what can we gather out of this? Because I'm looking at on the Yutani website, the Raft of Medusa article, which I will have in the footnotes, there's one engineer just clawing at this door. And the way they're all sculpted or assembled by the props team, there's a real sense of motion. Like, everyone's just trying their hardest to get across this divide, and they ultimately never achieve that.
What could be said a lot in this minute, that you've got this advanced race as the space jockeys, and their suits failed them. And I feel like in the coming minutes, when that happens to Melbourne, it's kind of foreshadowed already. Like, everything that we've seen is foreshadowed. The engineer kneeling down and having his head taken off, and then Charlie soon suffering a similar fate. You know, all of this foreshadowing is kind of there, and it's very subtle. Eternal recurrence again. It's a visitation on that theme, and it works. It works for the series, whether you're looking at it in an analytical point of view, or you're looking at it in a way in which you're just enjoying or putting these meanings into these extra layers of the movie. It can be enjoyed either way.
Yeah, I like that. This is a franchise that doesn't want to give you answers. I always find that funny, that even on the Blu-ray copy of Prometheus, it's like, you know, however many hours of additional features, your questions will be answered. Like, nah, bruv, that wasn't the point of the movie. But so many fans were like, this doesn't make sense. This, there are actually very few, what I would say, plot holes. You know, so many movie fans love to just toss that word out there. You know, oh, that was a plot hole. That didn't make sense. It's like, no, there's something called ambiguity. And modern geeks, I guess you could say, do not like ambiguity. And that is disappointing. Between the lines is where the most fun is had.
And one of the things I want to mention, as Yannick is talking to the boys in the ship and he is going past the pyramid scan, in the background you can see that there is a triangle upside down. And people were like, oh yeah, whatever, it's a triangle. Kind of, I feel like it's a kind of a homage to Dan O'Bannon's symbol when they found the space jockey in the pyramid. They saw a triangle inscribed on the dashboard. And then if you have a look at this Instagram picture I sent you, you'll see that there's the Prometheus poster and there's the exact point where the bodies are piled up. And then there's the triangle on the door.
Oh, yeah.
I believe it's intentional.
My other theory with what went down in the pyramid is maybe these engineers were trying to create a weapon. So they were trying to make the Xenomorph or the Deacon or whatever it is. And then it turned on them. So that is another theory that I haven't seen anything that directly refutes it. That's the thing, is that you can create so many theories surrounding what little but tantalizing evidence we have.
Yeah. I find it fun and enjoyable.
Well, that's all my notes on this minute. Do you have anything else?
No, that's pretty much it. I'm sad to go.
If you had so much fun, I'll have to have you on again. Well, definitely for Alien Covenant. And I'm trying to think of what other minutes you could... Well, if you want the Hammerpede minute, but that's coming up very soon, so I don't know.
Well, if you have the time, sure, I'd love to do it. It's all my right. Favorite scene.
All right. That about covers it. This is Coulson signing off.
And this is Mother of Studio Yutani signing off.
You can find me on traviandesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. And you can, of course, find Mother on Studio Yutani, which I will have a lot of links in the footnotes to all the artwork and articles and what have you that we've mentioned here.